Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
This is Tracy.
This is Samantha.
This is The Suspended Sentence.
Grab your latte and join us as we enter season two, starting January 1st of 2024.
A year packed full of serial killers that you may or may not have ever heard of.
Thanks for being there.
Stay safe.
Today, we bask in the light of mustachioed greatness. Hi, this is Daniel Segura, host of the Mustachioed Podcastio. You like mustaches? You like movies? You like sexy chinganos? Well, the Podcastio is the place for you. We are talking legendary mustaches from Charles Bronson to the great Burt Reynolds to the OG Ice-T. Find the Mustachioed Podcastio anywhere you listen to podcasts. That is Mustachioed Podcastio.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, friends. Thank you for joining us again for Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Stories. How are you doing, Declan? Yeah.
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am well. Looking forward to telling you interesting story today. So what are you going to be telling us about?
I'm going to talk about the Tri-State Tornado.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a great story, but what are you going to be telling us about?
Well, I'm going to be talking about an Amish man who broke away from some of the traditional Amish behaviors and ended up in jail for hate crimes.
Interesting.
So, okay. To go with my story, I have the Gin and Sin cocktail. It is 1.5 ounces of gin, 1 ounce of orange juice, 1 ounce of lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of grenadine, and then garnish with an orange twist. The instructions are to throw all your ingredients in a cocktail shaker, other than the garnish, shake with ice, strain into a chilled cocktail glass, and then garnish with your orange twist. So, are you ready?
It sounds good. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go.
Give it a try.
Oh, it's very puckery. It is,
yes, very
more
tart
than I would have expected. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, it tastes really good. This is a dangerous drink, but it's a little on the sour side.
Yeah, I like a sour drink though. Pretty tasty.
I do too. But I was not expecting that. With the grenadine, I thought it would cut through everything. Oh, it's tasty, but it's puckery.
Yes.
So let's... Let's talk about the Amish, shall we? Before we talk about the specific person in this case, I want to talk a little bit about the Amish community in general. For myself, and then also for people who don't necessarily know about the Amish. The Amish are a group of traditionalist Anabaptist Christians. That's what they align with religiously. Not that I know anything about aligning with religion, but that's what it says. They are set apart from other religious groups by their physical separation and their communities from other community members. Like, in their towns that they live, they pretty much just stay within the Amish community and settlement and don't fraternize a lot with their neighbors, so to speak, that live on the other side of the county, basically. So they're very separatists in that regard, as well as they are fairly strict adherence to wearing plain clothing, having simple lifestyles, and generally kind of pacifist nature. They're not out there causing brawls and stuff usually, and they just kind of mind their own business and stay to themselves, which wouldn't that be nice of a lot of other people in this world if they just mind their own damn business? The traditional Amish communities don't partake of many modern conveniences and technologies, like owning cars is not typical, and they don't have a lot of, you know, common things like TVs and cell phones and the stuff that we all associate with our regular daily lives. The traditional Amish communities don't have a lot of those things. However, some of the more recent Amish communities have adopted some of the modern technologies, like owning cars and things like that. They, you know, still want the self-sufficiency, but they also realize it's a modern world, so it's nice to have some modern conveniences. Self-sufficiency of its members is a big value of the community, and they strive to work together rather than involving many outsiders. Although some of the communities live with limited outside interactions and with a more primitive lifestyle, there are some divisions who live with more current way of living. Like I said, they have some of the current conveniences. Regardless if the community is more old school or not, the focus of the group is basically the same: church and family. They are religious in nature and very family oriented as a group. By most people's standards, an Amish community is considered strict. In 1995, when Samuel Mullett was 49 years old, he decided to leave his already strict community to form a new one that was even more strict. So what we would consider strict, he thought was too lenient, and he was like, no, thank you. We're going old school, harsh, and we're not doing this conveniently. So he settled in Burkholz, Ohio, bringing members of his former home and some of his family with him. About 120 people total made up Mullett's group. 2 years later, Mullett was ordained as a minister for his new settlement. Continuing on with the religious ceremonies, Mullett was ordained as a bishop for the group in 2001. However, this ordination was controversial because it wasn't considered necessarily an accurate one, because it wasn't conducted in the usual manner. And what I mean is, traditionally, to be ordained as a bishop in the church, there must be three bishops present to oversee the ceremony. So you have to have three bishops there that are doing the ceremony to say, yes, you are now a bishop. But in Mullett's case, he only had one bishop present. So some people were like, oh, we don't really consider him a bishop. But he was like, I don't care what you consider. I am what I am, and I'm a bishop now. Okay. So he's making up some new rules for himself. Not everyone saw eye to eye with how Mullett was conducting his behaviors within the group. In 2006, Mullett excommunicated the deacon of their community, which led a lot of people feeling hurt and confused over his actions. He didn't like this guy, so he kicked him out. And then a bunch of the other community members were like, that's not cool. So shortly after that happened, because of all the bad feelings, 9 families decided to part ways and leave Mullett in his Burkholz community. That was about a third of the entire group that left.
Wow.
So, yeah. you know, when you consider 9 families and there's a lot of people in those families. In retaliation, Mullet then formally excommunicated those families, which caused a big problem for them, because Amish families that have been excommunicated from one strict community could not join any other conservative Amish communities. So it basically left them without any community. They couldn't go to another Amish settlement and join them because they had been formally excommunicated. So apparently that's a big deal. The practice was known as quote unquote strict shunning, which seems weird and harsh, but later that year, after several meetings with higher officials within the greater Amish communities, so a lot of the little pods of Amish communities. I'm going to say community a lot because I don't know what else to call it, but, you know, like the little townships, basically. Some of the officials higher in the church said, we're not going to abide by Mullet's decision. And so those families were then allowed to go join other Amish groups if they chose to do so. So they were no longer left out in the cold of their religion and, you know, homing and like where they could live and that kind of stuff. So Mullet's behaviors were escalating over the years. He started telling members of the community that they should stop reading the Bible and just ask him.
Okay.
Yeah, because he was like, I completely understand what is written, and it's going to take you too long to figure it out. So if you're curious about what's written in the Bible, just ask me and I'll tell you. Does that sound...
Sounds
cult-like? Fishy. Yeah. Yes, I mean, how many times have we talked about cults where it was the leader of this group that said, I can tell you exactly what is meant in the Bible because some either I know more than you or a spiritual deity came to me and told me what it means or whatever. But, you know, very reminiscent of a cult. They weren't necessarily supposed to reject their religion. He just wanted them to take his interpretations rather than reading it for themselves. Because, you know, you could misinterpret it. He didn't want that. He wanted to tell you how you were supposed to understand it. Just crazy to me. He started enforcing punishments against members who bothered him. One of the chosen methods of retaliation was the chicken coop. So in their little community, they had a bunch of chickens, and chickens are in a coop. And so basically, if you pissed him off, he would force the men to live in the chicken coop with the chickens for days.
This must be a big chicken
or weeks.
Coop.
What's that?
Must be a big chicken coop. Usually,
not necessarily. They were just like, it's big enough for you to go sleep in, so go sleep in the chicken coop. Mm. And they might be there for weeks living in
Jesus
chicken crap. Because what do chickens do in a coop but poop? So chicken poop in the coop. There you go. And of course, there were allegations about sexual misconduct against Mullet because this is very culty in nature, and so what do a lot of cults have to do with punishment and stuff is, of course, being sexually inappropriate. So Mullet explained that he was conducting quote-unquote sexual counseling with the wives of the men who disobeyed his orders. So if a husband did something that pissed him off, he was going to sexually counsel the wives to make the husbands behave. I don't even I can't draw those two things in a straight line. No.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
He further explained that having sex with other men's wives was to make them better wives and to drive the devil out of them. So I guess if you piss him off, you're sleeping with chicken coop poop, and then your wife is getting assaulted sexually.
Jesus, this guy sucks.
For real. He even imposed this counseling on his daughter-in-law.
Jesus.
Yeah. Mullet's control over the community came to a head in 2011 when several attacks took place on former Burkholz members or people who had outwardly opposed Mullet and his teachings, I guess you want to call it. From September to November of 2011, there were five separate attacks that took place under the direction of Mullet. These weren't just your average attacks, though. But by brutal standards, the attacks weren't as violent as some of the stories we've told before. I mean, anybody that's listened to any of our stories, there's usually a murder. There's no murder involved in this. But it's still brutal, and he ended up in jail over it. The attacks targeted some of the most fundamental beliefs held by Amish members. During these incidents, 15 of Mullet's followers forcibly detained their victims and cut off their hair and beards using scissors, battery-powered clippers, and horse shears. Like I said, nobody died. They just had their hair cut off. However, that's a big deal to Amish people. Because hair and beards were a status symbol showing your devotion to the church, your religion, and your family. Men who grow their hair and beards without cutting it off start after they get married. So they get married and then they let their hair and beards just go for it. And so by cutting that, their decades and years long worth of hair growth, it was a slap in the face to all of their traditions. Due to the nature of attacks and the background, because of the religious ties, these weren't just, you know, they didn't target somebody who didn't piss them off, and they didn't target them in a way like slashing their tires on their horse and carriage or anything like that. They targeted them and their religious views. So it was considered a federal hate crime.
Wow.
Mullet himself was not present at the time of the assaults, but prosecutors charged him anyway as the orchestrator of the attacks. Kind of like Charles Manson. Yeah. Charles Manson got to go to prison for, he wasn't there. Mullet didn't go to prison for life, but in 2012, Mullet and the 15 members who participated in the attacks were convicted of hate crimes and conspiracy charges. Initially, he was sentenced to 15 years in prison, but it was later reduced to 10 years. He was placed on house arrest in Burkholz in 2020 to complete his sentence. It is believed he is still living in that community, but nobody really knows. So maybe he's in Burkholz, Ohio. In his little compound, I don't know.
Imagine, but like being asked while you're in jail. It's like, I cut some people's hair.
Right. Right.
He didn't even cut it.
You
he just
definitely
told
do
to cut
not.
Their hair.
There's no street cred that you can use that on. There, yeah. No. You're in prison with certifiable serial killers and people who, you know, rape and murder and stuff. And this guy's like, well, I didn't actually cut anybody's hair. I just told some other people to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was still a hate crime, technically. So he got to go to prison for that. And I found this story watching a show on Hulu called How I Escaped My Cult. And I'm not putting in it as a chaser because although it is a good show, there's, you know, bad stuff that happens in every freaking episode. So it's not a positive, like, feel good moment. But I would say, you know, if you want to learn about different cults, I had never, when it said there was an Amish cult, I was like, bullshit, how is that an Amish cult? And then they got into the details and I was like, oh shit, yeah, that's very culty like. So yeah, who knew there was an Amish cult? Now you know.
Now we know.
Yeah. So tell us about this tornado.
Okay. It was March 18th, 1925. It was an unremarkable spring day for the Midwest, or so it seemed. By early afternoon, skies darkened over southeastern Missouri, but what emerged from those clouds wasn't just a thunderstorm. It was a tornado so powerful and fast and so deadly it would go on to kill 695 people and injure more than 2,000.
Whoa, that's a lot. Holy yes. crap. Okay, so.
So this story?
You said 1925?
Yes.
Do you think that there would be more victims or less victims now? Because it's, oh my God, that's 100 years ago. Like,
yeah.
I mean, more victims because they're probably left. More populated area.
But you have the technology to know that a tornado's coming. That was part of the issue with why so many people died, is because they didn't have a good communication system for, like, hey, everybody take shelter.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Right. You look up and you're like, oh shit, it's right there. Now what?
Yeah. This story takes place in Ellington, Missouri, just before 1 p.m. in the afternoon. A massive supercell thunderstorm was brewing, and it had all the ingredients for something catastrophic. Warm, moist air from the Gulf, a strong cold front, and wind shear. But no one knew what was coming. Weather forecasting in 1925 was primitive. The word tornado was actually banned from forecast because they believed it caused panic. Which is just dumb.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
There were no sirens, no alerts, just clouds. By 1:01 p.m., the tornado touched down near Ellington, but this wasn't an ordinary tornado. It was over a mile wide, and it didn't move like most twisters. It changed across the landscape at 70 miles an hour. So 1 mile wide tornado. 70 miles an hour.
My brain cannot fathom that. Like, I don't, I can't comprehend
tornadoes
that.
Here. So it's like, it must be terrifying.
I mean, we've had small ones, but it's really rare and they don't do a lot of damage.
So the storm roared northeast towards Gorham, Illinois. It was among the first towns to take a direct hit. Nearly the entire town was destroyed. 34 people died there alone. Oof. 15 minutes later, the tornado tore into Murfreesboro, where it claimed the highest single town death toll in U.S. tornado history. 234 people died.
Whoa.
Homes were reduced to splinters. Families vanished beneath rubble. Survivors spoke of being flung hundreds of feet and watching entire buildings explode.
Wow.
Just coming through and ripping everything out.
Holy goodness.
Yeah. This tornado didn't discriminate. Schools, churches, homes, it tore through everything in DeSoto, Illinois. A schoolhouse was hit, killing 33 students.
Wow.
It crossed into Indiana. And the devastation continued. By now, the storm had traveled over 200 miles, stayed on the ground for more than 3 hours, and reached F5 strength, which is the most powerful tornado rating, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. The tri-state tornado was one of the most brutal in U.S. history. And so first, like, the reason it was so dangerous is the speed. Tornadoes travel 30 to 40 miles an hour. This one raced across the land at double that. And so people didn't really have time to react.
Wow. Yeah. Holy.
Another reason it was so devastating. Yeah, they're terrifying. So with it being 1.2 miles wide, creating, like, it just engulfed entire, like, blocks. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That the mile wide thing is the hardest thing for me to comprehend. Like, I'm thinking, like, when I, you know, from going for a run out of our house, like down the street and then around the corner and past the park is a mile.
Jesus. Yeah, that's huge.
So
that's a really,
that'd be
tornado.
Like from the entrance to our neighborhood to the other side of the lake by the, you know, Putnam's Point. It would be all that far.
Yeah. Jesus.
God. Moving, yeah. 70 miles an hour. I don't even like to drive that fast. Okay, well, yes, I do, but that's a lie.
So another reason it was so deadly is buildings weren't really made to withstand tornadoes back then. They,
yeah.
Yeah. They weren't built as that's well what, as they that are was, now. So.
That's what I was wondering about, like the fatalities, if it would be less now because they're do a better job of building stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So by the time the storm dissipated in Petersburg, Indiana, the damage was almost impossible to measure with over 15,000 homes being destroyed.
Jesus.
Yeah. And that is the story of the most deadly tornado in U.S. history.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Terrifying.
I don't like it at all.
I'm glad we don't get tornadoes here.
Same. Same.
You have a chaser for us?
I do have a chaser. My chaser is a watch recommendation. Absolute garbage TV. People who know me know that I occasionally like to watch garbage TV. Mm-hmm. I consider it garbage TV. Maybe some other people wouldn't, but it's the Love is Blind show on Netflix. And I don't have like just a general like season or specific recommendation, but I recommend watching the ones from other countries. If you like this, if you like the show, it's basically a dating show. Here's the premise. People who have never met each other go into these, they call them pods, men on one side, women on the other, and they meet each other without seeing each other. It's all just talking to each other. So you don't get to see what the other person looks like. Some people don't even want to tell you what they look like. And then you get 10 days to go on these dates without ever seeing somebody and meeting them through a wall to see if you like them. And then they decide, if you meet somebody that you like, then you're supposed to propose to them. And then at the end of the whole experiment, get married. It's not a very good percentage of people that that date in the pods, get engaged, and then actually get married at the end. Because it's like, so they go on these 10 days of dates. They get engaged. Then they go on a little 4 or 5 day vacation together. Then they go back to a town and live together. They're supposed to live together in the same house, apartment, whatever. And then at the end of like 3 weeks, then they're supposed to get married, if they want to stay together. It's very low percentage of people that get married and then a year later are still married. But there are some people that actually did it. And just as a whole, the show is somewhat entertaining. It definitely sparks a lot of conversations of like, I can't believe that they talk like that to each other, or I can't believe that they would act this way, whatever. But what's really interesting is they have it in other countries. And so it's, I've been sucked into watching it for, like, there's one set in the Middle East, and their culture is completely different from the US. They don't live together. They just go out on dates together after the fact and then decide if they want to go through a ceremony. And then there's some in Sweden, and there's one in Argentina and Mexico. So it's interesting to me to see how these other cultures go through this process.
Yeah.
In one of the things that I noticed, like, was a big standout for me was we just recently watched the one from Argentina. And I don't know if it was just the people in this particular episode, or I should say season, but they tell each other that they love each other within like minutes, it feels like, of meeting the other person. Like, I really connect with you and we can have a conversation. I am in love with you. And the US, some of them are kind of similar. Other countries, they do not say I love you until like maybe on their wedding day if they decide to do it. So it's just interesting to me to see the dynamics of the different cultures. So it's a like cultural interest to me.
Sounds interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
It's also interesting to me to see how the family members react to the circumstances. So a couple will get engaged and then come home from their little vacation and then tell their parents and their siblings, oh, I'm getting married in 3 weeks. And some of the family members are hostile about it. Some are very accepting. Other families are like, absolutely not. I don't even know what you're doing, why you did this. I will not condone this behavior and I'm not coming to your wedding.
That's sad.
It is really sad, and it's just shocking to me. That's all. Like, just to see the behaviors. So what about you? What chaser do you have?
I have another audio drama. This one is called Entombed, and it's got a mixture of like Indiana Jones and ancient Egypt mythology and stuff like that, and it's pretty cool.
I love it.
Yeah. It's only eight episodes. It's not too long. But it's got some cool elements in there that I really like. And some time travel stuff, and it's pretty cool.
Okay. So question with the time travel stuff. Is it the characters traveling back and forth through time, or is it the storyline traveling back and forth through time?
Characters. So
okay, is it easy to understand that they did that?
Yeah
it's okay,
not like a super confusing time travel show. So,
and the reason I'm asking is because your dad and I will listen to the audio dramas while we're like playing cards or on a car trip or whatever, and when it jumps back and forth in the timeline of the story, your dad hates it. He gets so confused. He's like, what the F is going on? She was just talking to this guy and now she's talking to that guy. And I'm like, yeah, because it's like 20 years before. And he's like, how did you know that? Like, contextual clues? I don't know.
Just listen.
So
should they explain it at some point?
Time. Well, there's that point. I mean, he's not going to listen to this, so we can talk shit about him that he doesn't always listen very well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. As long as it's not super confusing, because I don't like trying to explain it to him when it's like timeline stuff going back and forth.
It's easy to follow.
Okay. Sounds good.
I think that just about wraps up today's episode. Thanks for joining us once again, everybody.
Thanks, friends.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.